You know, you're being...
Shut up.
Right at the beginning, you're a little bitchy, I have to say. At the, now, so, okay, Jim Ferris.
Hold on.
And Jim Ferris is my co-host, and I'm Douglas Lane.
Douglas Lane.
Yes, and Jim is a talented writer.
Are we on?
Yes, we're on recording right now. Jim Ferris is a talented person all around. He has, in his life, done many things and continues to do many things.
And Douglas Lane, back at you, you are also very full of things. You're full of things.
All right. So
you have many, many talents.
I do. I guess I do.
You do. You're a doctor?
I'm not a doctor. No. But you know what I've been doing lately is watching that
Doctor Show
on Netflix. I watched
L.A. Law. Is it L.A. Law?
No, you know that show. I believe that show was about lawyers.
Oh yeah.
And this show that I've been watching, it's House M.D.
Starring, that's a show.
Stephen Fry's best friend Hugh Laurie.
That's right. That's right. Wooster and Jeeves.
Jeeves and Wooster. Wooster's.
Who knew that that boy, that manservant, or that fop was a doctor?
That fop. He turned out to be an American cool kid and a doctor.
Yep, and cranky. You know about cranky?
He was cranky. That guy, that's what I liked the most about him.
He's cranky.
Some cranky misanthrope, but with
You know what else? He was Stuart Little's father, too.
He was. But in Stuart Little, he was the most likable and kind of happy-go-lucky type character, somewhat stupid, but you
hasn't
know.
He have you met him? Because I know he's performed with the Oregon Symphony, hasn't he?
He has. He has performed with the Oregon Symphony twice, and both times I had not watched House, and both times I worked the concert and had the opportunity to go in and watch the show, but I'm such a disgruntled employee. I was like, yeah, I'm done. If I can go home, I'm going home.
So you never saw him?
I never even saw him.
Oh.
Hello, sick people and their loved ones. In the interest of saving time and avoiding a lot of boring chit-chat later, I'm Dr. Gregory House. You can call me Greg. I'm one of three doctors staffing this clinic this morning.
Short, sweet, grab a file.
This ray of sunshine is Dr. Lisa Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy runs this whole hospital, so unfortunately she's much too busy to deal with you. I am a board certified diagnostician with a double specialty of infectious disease and nephrology. I'm also the only doctor currently employed at this clinic who's forced to be here against his will. That is true, isn't it? But not to worry, because for most of you, this job could be done by a monkey with a bottle of Motrin. Speaking of which, if you're particularly annoying, you may see me reach for this. This is Vicodin. It's mine. You can't have any.
I've been watching House, and here's a couple of comments about House, and then we'll move on. We'll forget it. But in the TV series House, it's a formula show, like Murder, She Wrote, or like Perry Mason. I'm trying to get references that former people like you would know.
I Love Lucy.
Yeah, it's not like I Love Lucy. It's like Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, yeah.
And Matlock, okay? So, yeah. And
Dr. Dick Van, Dr. Petrie, M.D.
Yeah, maybe. That was a mystery show, too, right?
It was.
Yeah. So it's like that. But so it has this formula, but then on the other hand, it has this long story arc for the main character. And that long story arc, as it went along, because I've been watching season after season of this on Netflix, they lost their way. There was a moment at the end of the first or second season where the house got shot and he couldn't tell the difference between reality and hallucination. And that's at that point when that happened, they should have either gone with that or not, but they kind of half went with that for later on. He has hallucinations of dead people, and then he has Vicodin addiction and blah, blah, blah. They lost their nerve, basically, is what I'm saying about House. And what I'm going to say about this show, what we're doing now, we're never going to lose our nerve.
We aren't. No, we're going to keep our edge.
So that's our commitment. So, so I wanted to talk about that. And also, I wanted to mention that we lost James Garner. He was a great actor.
I liked his work. I liked him.
I did, too. I liked him a lot in the Americanization of Emily.
Very nice. Very nicely done.
Which is a movie maybe we could watch for the double feature review. The Rockford Files, of course, we can't watch that, but he was big for that.
He was in Maverick. He was in Maverick, too.
Maverick. The movie or the TV show are we talking about now?
He was in both, but his big break came with the TV show, Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him in The Great Escape. Just loved that movie. Loved him in Up Periscope and The Thrill of It All and Move Over, Darling.
And it's really sad when someone like James Garner, who you've loved for those many years and is such a great actor, wastes his talent by, you know, shooting up heroin. It's just a tragedy.
I think you've got him confused with, I don't know.
So this week, or this month, our movies were almost movies.
Well, okay.
I would say they're almost movies. It was the Wild Women of Wongo from 1958.
1958's Wild Women of Wongo.
And Rod Taylor and Mr. Fury.
Yes.
In the Colossus and the Amazon Queen.
Colossus and the Amazon Queen from 1960. I don't know why that movie was made or why Rod Taylor was in it.
He wrote it, too, I heard. I read that Rod Taylor had to rewrite the script a lot.
I imagine so, because it's kind of incoherent anyway. But why at the his career had in 1960, he was at the top of his career. I don't know why he went to Italy and made this movie.
He must have been contractually obligated before The Time Machine came out to do that.
I don't know. He had done Range Free County. He had done The Time Machine. He was 2 years away from doing The Birds. He was a box office name. I mean, you got me. And then he goes over and does this. It's like...
But before we get to Colossus, which, by the way, of the two movies, I'd say that Colossus and the Amazon Queen is more watchable.
It was. I agree with you. I'm surprised. It was more watchable.
Neither of them are particularly watchable.
No, it's true.
Of the two of them, let's talk about some of the, before we jump into the Wild Women of Wongo.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the things that they had in common.
Wisecracking parrots.
That's the big thing. It's the same parrot.
I don't understand.
It seems like it's the same parrot with the same voice saying the same things in both movies.
I know it. And it is a total coincidence. They are not made by the same people. There is nothing about these movies that have any sameness to them. One was made domestically in Florida. The other one's made in Italy and was dubbed. Yet they both have wisecracking parrots that say actually the same lines of dialogue.
I think it's the same parrot.
It could be. I don't know.
You know, parrots live a while. It could be that he went to whoever the director was of Colossus and the Amazon Queen, said, look at my, portfolio. Look at my earlier work in The Wild Women of Wongo.
That's
not a great film, but I carried it,
He does. He has the last line in the movie.
Oh, man. So there's that.
Both movies, I think the parrot has the last line.
There's a couple other themes or things that they have in common. The other is there's a religion.
Yes.
In both that plays a big part. A kind of primitive religion in both movies.
Yeah.
It has a big say and big role to play for the characters. And both of them are about basically mating and sex.
Yes.
And the religion dictates to them how they can do that.
That's right. And society is dominated by women.
And Wild Women of Wongo...
Well, in both of them.
I'm not saying... Well, Women Wongo, the society wasn't really dominated by women. Women ended up in a position of having to fend for themselves.
That princess that runs Wongo Island, she...
No, her father's the king, and she's just...
I know.
But she's out of turn. She's acting out of turn. She's not, like, institutionally supposed to be running the show.
No, but she is, and she sits on a throne by herself, and she's very familiar with the dragon
oh,
monster.
Oh, wait, you're talking about the goddess or whatever that is, whoever that is.
I don't even...
In the temple. She's not one of the Wongo people. She's not one of the whatever the other tribe's people. She's somebody who happens to have a very large wig.
She does have a big wig, and her idea of acting is to basically move your... In fact, I've noticed in that movie, a lot of the acting seemed to be ducking and weaving and moving your arms.
Yeah, and in her case, moving her hair back.
Moving her hair and striking poses and looking shocked a lot.
So I watched a bit of that Wild Women of Wongo with my daughter.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't want to watch it on my own. I wanted someone who I could wisecrack with. And so we watched the beginning of it. And at the beginning of the movie, the Wild Women... Well, first of all, the premise of the Wild Women of Wongo, that there are two tribes.
That's right. Two islands.
Two islands, two tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Wongo and...
The other one.
Uruguay.
And yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Wherever it is. And
that's right.
And one island... not the Wild Women of Wongo Island, but the other one, all the men are beautiful.
That's right. And all the women are ugly.
Are hags.
That's right.
And then on the other island, the reverse.
That's right.
All the women are beautiful and all the men are brutes and ugly. And
that's right.
So I spent the first 10 minutes of the movie going, like when I first saw the first character we see is this woman in the temple. She's neither. She's of neither place. And I was saying, is she supposed to be pretty or ugly? Is she one of the ugly women or pretty? Is he ugly? Is he pretty?
You know, this is why we don't watch the movies together, because you ask that about every movie.
Is he ugly? Is he pretty?
I know. You're confused by everything.
What?
It's a man. It must be. Oh, no. It's a god, I'm sure.
What's the story behind the Wild Women of Wongo?
I'm glad you asked. It was made, best as I could figure out and find out, it was made in Florida. Both those islands, I know this is a shock to you, both the islands are Florida. They didn't shoot on two separate islands. It's all Florida. It's basically a water ski resort area of Florida. All of the women in it lived in Florida. A lot of them were water skiers or bathing beauties in that resort.
I looked up the cast list, and a few of them were Playboy models.
Yeah, Playboy models. And, of course, Adrienne Barbeau is also in the movie. She's one of the Wild Women of Wongo. She would later go on to play Maud's daughter on the Maud series with Bea Arthur. And more importantly, she was the female lead in Escape from New York with Kurt Russell. And she's the love interest of Swamp Thing in the movie Swamp Thing.
And she's the one of the leopard skin?
She's one of the girls. Don't ask me which one. I believe she's the younger one with the dark hair, but honestly, I couldn't tell you.
She's the lead. She's the lead woman in it. I just Googled it up right here. Adrienne Barbeau, she was the one in Leopard Skin. She was the one.
Yeah, Leopard Skin.
Yeah, she's the one who said, hey, I don't want to marry that guy. I want to marry the new pretty boy from the other island.
That's right. And he is a pretty boy, too.
He is.
That's right.
When he came on the scene, I said, ah. He's the pretty one.
He's the pretty guy. That's true. And I think this guy made this movie by getting a lot of cooperation from the local town saying, you know, we'll make a movie and it'll be in color. And everyone will want to come here because they'll see these beautiful girls and all this beautiful swamp land that we've made into a park and everything will be great. And they went, okay, and then they made this movie, which, of course, achieved none of those goals. But
you know what it reminds me of is like the old Betty Page postcards and
kind of, yeah.
It has that quality to it. Like you would expect her maybe to have a role.
Mm-hmm.
Because she could have.
My favorite scene in the movie is when the old hag, who's huge, is talking, and then suddenly she screams, and they all run away. And they run, and then in the next scene, she goes, I can't run anymore, and she just collapses on the ground. It's my favorite scene. I love that scene.
Yeah, that's one of the good ones. My favorite scene is the very ending, but we won't get to that yet.
Oh, no, no. And it's also narrated by Mother Nature.
Mother Nature.
Mother Nature, who says that she created Wongo with Father Time.
Yeah, right.
Father Time and Mother Nature made the Wild Women of Wongo Island.
They made a mistake.
Yeah, they did. That's what they said.
They on the one island, they put all the beautiful women, and on the other, they put all the beautiful men, and it was a terrible mistake.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's what they said. I also enjoyed the sacrifice dance to the dragon god.
Mm-hmm. Ladies of Wongo, the dragon god is angry. Do you come to offer sacrifice? We have awaited the god each night, but he has not chosen a mate. That is why I have called you to the temple. Offer yourselves to him as sacrifice.
In fact, the dragon gods, which are just, I don't know if you noticed, in a couple scenes, they're alligators, and a couple of them have, like, paint on them. I just found, because not all of them had paint on them, just some of them, like a big swath of paint on their back, which made them more monstery. I don't know. But I love when they dance to them, and then later on when they push the guys and the guys get eaten by them. I like that, too.
It's the acting that carries it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the acting does. There are some wonderful moments where people are raising their arms. And also, there are some, in both movies, there are some wonderful, wonderful dance numbers.
There are.
Beautiful.
It's true. There's some great
tribal dance numbers.
What I thought about this was that both movies had basically a similar outlook. And this movie was really pushing the idea that, you know, good-looking people should be with good-looking people, obviously. And that it makes a big difference, you know, who you end up with and how things should be arranged. And for the Wongo people, there was a natural order as to who should screw who.
That's true.
That had been set aside. That had been ruined by Mother Nature, who, on some sort of bet with Father Time, decided to mess up the arrangement and separate these lovers.
That's right.
And make them, you know, sleep with Grandpa or whatever. I don't know what. Do you know, the thing is, what really made the women of the other island unattractive was they're usually about 10 to 20 years older than anyone from the other island.
And they were all kind of heavy, and they wore muumuus.
There was one that was heavy. But if you look carefully, there's a wide array. Some of the women who are supposed to be ugly are just fine looking. Some of them are not so good looking. Some of them are tall and skinny.
That's true.
And then the men, it's the same story. There was, like, one guy who was one of the ugly men. He wasn't ugly. He actually was buff just like everybody else, but he made a face a lot.
That's right.
He scrunched up his face all the time.
That's right. Well, that also is a credit to all the acting. There's a lot, a lot of winking and grimacing to the camera, a lot of that, which is just fine.
So what was it in 1958 and 1960 that made people think, oh, I know what people want to see. They want to see a story about how people mate on a primitive level and what the natural order is for who should be with who. What was that? Why was that so compelling? And is there a homoerotic theme or subtext to these pictures?
Well, gosh, there's so many big questions that you pose. I think you hit on something when you talked about the Betty Page postcards. These are kind of the equivalent of French postcards or softcore pornography. And that you deal with it in sort of a fairy tale story, and it's like wink, wink, but really it's all about eyeing the beautiful girls and the shapely girls running around, and they're talking about sex, which was in 1958 was so naughty, and most movies didn't talk about it and didn't talk about it expressly like that. And I think it was just an excuse to kind of make a softcore, a very softcore movie that way in that time. Kind of like magazines, before Playboy, when they really just didn't really know how to do it too well. Like there'd be like a jungle pull out of some magazine and it would just be girls lying around in a really bad kind of obvious set. And that would be the extent of the theme of being in a jungle, would be that they would have palm trees around them, you know.
Right.
I guess. I'm guessing. I don't know. I was much younger then.
You were very young then.
I was.
So, when you were telling me, okay, so these are basically porn movies, but soft, or pinup movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, particularly Wild Women of Wongo.
Well, I'm reminded of a documentary I saw recently. A friend of mine in San Francisco teaches porn studies at the University of San Francisco. And he sent me a link to a video online or a documentary online about the history of pornography and how pornography didn't exist before the Victorian era. And it was because of the basically, archaeological finds of Roman artworks that were erotic in nature, that the category of pornography was created by Victorian people. And like in Roman times, you go into someone's house, they would just have these depictions of oral sex or bestiality or whatever it would be. All around, not in every room, but they would be prominently displayed in their homes, and it was not unusual or frowned upon or secreted away, because sexuality and daily life were not completely separated out.
Yeah, they were on plates and gourds and different display
and
items,
mosaics in your main living room, say.
Yeah.
It was only in the Victorian era and after that we start hiding these kinds of images away,
sure,
and secreting them away. And I feel like that Victorian morality is sort of at play in the Wild Women of Mongo.
Pornography starts when you want to have state regulation, when you want to draw up a set of laws that are going to try and control the images. In ancient Rome, there were images of sexuality all around. Sexuality was a normal part of life. You could see erect phalluses, you could see images of people copulating, you could see bawdy Roman comedies. But there were ways of regulating sexual behavior through just general forms of social regulation. The trouble comes when you start to say that the problem is in the object, in the image itself, and not in the person who's looking. Because you can't regulate the internal feelings of a person. You can't say there is a law against being sexually stimulated. The Victorians had to try and draw up a list of things that were likely to, as they put it, deprave and corrupt. And all the problems of legislation come from this tension, that in the ancient world, it was a problem for self-control, as opposed to in the modern world, where we try and regulate images by state law.
It's like it's disguised as something else. And it's like, ooh, look at us. And there's a lot of mugging for the camera, you know. Well, the very end of them all the guys winking at the camera, all the guys end up getting the girls. And then each one of them gets a moment where they look right at the camera and then they wink and give you like a high five or whatever.
That was my favorite moment.
Boy, that is so cool.
This is after they've been captured and made to march in a line. They've been basically treated as slaves.
That's right.
And they'd been taken to the temple against their will to marry the beautiful women. And then they all wink at the camera. And there's a sense, I almost got the sense, looking at these big buff guys when they're winking at the camera, to thinking, they're saying, yeah, sure, I'm marrying her.
Well, I've thought that myself, but I don't think they intended that. But But I did think, yeah, that's right. I'm getting married. Ha ha. That's right. I did think that.
All right, so now let's move on. We'll go to the Colossus and the Amazon Queen.
Well, to me, this was truly kind of the find of this double bill. I had no idea because it just kept getting stranger to me, this movie. It started off strange because
yes.
I'm sure you noticed it is a big band kind of show business theme kind of soundtrack that doesn't fit the movie at all.
Yeah, that's true.
And right off the bat, I was going, why is this? It looked like a Las Vegas show was starting. It sounded like that.
Well, it was the Caesar.
Da 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 da. I mean, it's.
Well, they're supposed to be. It's Greece, so the not Caesar, but the king there. He starts off the movie with, "Okay, we're gonna for fun, we're gonna play our games."
That's right.
And it doesn't matter who wins or who loses.
That's right.
Just the sportsmanship of it.
That's right.
And then so everyone has to participate, except for us up in the box seats here. We'll just
That's
watch.
True. That's true.
So go. And then the game is all the muscle-bound men on the field just beating the heck out of each other in really unconvincing ways.
That's right. That's right. That's right. I like that, particularly with the jazzy, groovy, big band score that was comedic, too. Boing, a lot of...
Oh, well, it's a comedy.
Yeah. I get the feeling that they thought it was a comedy after they made it.
Do you think they inserted stuff?
Well, I think the music really is like comedy music, but the music really struck me because it doesn't fit the movie anywhere. It doesn't make sense to have. There is a chase where they're on horses later, and it's cha-cha music playing.
Well, it was a satire. It was a goofy, zany satire.
Yeah, okay. There's also a big, beautiful musical number with the girls dancing, mm-hmm. Which I liked, too. Which also, I thought Sammy Davis Jr. might come out and do a number. It was at a Las Vegas show in the middle of this Sword and Sandal movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't you believe it? That's just the trouble. You know, to the Amazons, we're not so much working men as working animals. Useful for a while, but not for always.
The answer to that is to keep being good. Make yourself useful.
No, I guess they made it as a comedy, but, well, I mean, how can you say they didn't make it as a comedy when the whole point of the movie is the sacred girdle? They're all looking for the sacred girdle.
No, it's definitely
even the wisecracking parrot knew about the girdle.
Yeah, that's right. So you got the cast of this thing. You got Rod Taylor, Ed Fury.
I think Ed Fury's in the other one too.
Is he?
I think so.
What was he the young guy?
I don't know who he was.
Interesting. I'm going to look that up right now because that would be the Wild Women of Wongo cast. 1958,
mm-hmm.
Ed Fury.
Yeah, he's in both of them.
And in that one, he plays Gabbo.
Oh, Gabbo.
No idea.
No idea. But he played Gabbo, so we know that. That's good.
So there's another connection, the parrot and Ed Fury. I think Ed Fury probably said, I know just the parrot.
Yeah, he probably did. I worked with a parrot a few years ago. Let's bring him in.
Yeah. So, anyhow, yes, so Ed Fury, Rod Taylor, Dorian Gray, which I is that a painting?
I don't. I believe it was a painting.
Let's see who else is in it. Daniela Rococo.
Oh yes,
and beautiful Amazon woman number two.
There were all these Italian women, and none of them seem to have had careers beyond. I love international beauties that are in 60s movies, but I didn't recognize any of those names from other films. There's no Rosanna Podesta in
there. Well, I'll tell you one thing about this movie is that in this movie, there are some good-looking women in this movie. Don't get me wrong.
There really are.
And I like how they're dressed. There's some great shots of the women running around.
Yeah, that's true.
With the one breast almost exposed, you know, it's great.
That's right.
It's great stuff. But the main character, the main woman, who's like in love with Ed Fury, she's kind of freaky looking. Her eyebrows are gone and painted on instead. I guess
that's
was the deal in the Amazon Times. And other than that, there's nothing to recommend her.
Well, she has also crazy hair. She has crazy hair, honey bun hair.
Yeah, and then drawn on eyebrows. And the only, I guess she's sassy. You know.
She has opinions about things.
They all have opinions about things.
They do. But, I mean, she's really mouthy.
Yeah, right. She's mouthy against the other women.
Did you like their battle uniforms? Did you like all that?
I did. I loved it all. Yeah. But the thing about this movie is it's a mirror image because the women run everything.
That's right.
And the men stay at home. They have to take care of the household.
The women! Here come the women!
Mistress, you have early today.
Soup's on.
What? You've just arrived and you want to eat already?
Well, I've been training, Butch, and I don't want any back talk from you.
I suppose you women think that washing and ironing a week's laundry and slaving away over a red hot stove all morning isn't hard work.
Yeah, I'd like to see you do my work for just one day.
My goodness, as if I didn't know what you call working all day long on horseback, just playing with the other Amazons or else shooting dice whenever it's raining. You have no idea what work is, that's all.
And you do, I imagine.
I do? Why, my good woman, I get up every single morning at daybreak. I tidy up the house, and then one day it's the washing. Another day I have to do the baking. And you never show me any consideration. It's awful, awful, do you hear? I'm fed up with being barked at all the time by a brood of an Amazon. And by Amazon private, not even a corporal!
Well, the men in the Amazon city are a little... I don't know if you noticed, because it's very subtle. But they seemed a little, I don't know how you say, light in the loafers, a little poofy. They seemed a little hello, a little poofy to me. A little bit, just a nuance. There you go. See, that was the other shoe. You had the Las Vegas show business, big band music. You had Rod Taylor. You had all those girls. You had those dance numbers. But then you see the men who live in the town, who I believe when the camera pans through windows, they're like, how did you get your sheets so wide? I wore my nails down to a nub making bread.
I'd say even Rod Taylor seems a little light in his loafers.
He seemed very foopy to me.
The only one who didn't was Ed Fury, and that's
Ed
just
Fury.
He's butch, but that he still not convincingly straight. I don't think there's one straight man in this movie. And
no, he seemed delightfully not straight to me, Ed Fury. I thought about him later. But, you know, that's a different story. But I so enjoyed the fact that it caught me, that it surprised, that happened. And then the girls come back from battle.
When you're a former person like you are, when that happens, it's like a little miracle.
I was like, really? A 1960 movie?
Oh, you mean the movie.
No, you were right. I was trying to be diplomatic. You were right.
So, but I'm sorry. You were going to talk about
the... See, I'm like Western Europe. You're like Putin.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So
I have no comeback to that.
No. Well, you know.
So, no, okay, but now there's actually one label, making no bones about it, pardon the pun, but very obviously gay character.
Mm-hmm.
In the Colossus and the Amazon Queen, and it's not Rod Taylor. He's supposedly straight, and it's not even the eunuchs that live in, because that's what they, I think, kind of were. They were eunuchs. They've been emasculated. That's why they were so, you know, light in the loafers.
Well, they talk about that actually later, you know. I mean, well, they don't exactly talk
about
that.
No, but after one night in paradise, you get selected by the beauties who run the island.
Have you ever thought what happens to the guys after that?
Yeah, exactly.
One character asks the...
And it's off with your head.
Princess, well, yeah, so to speak.
So, so there are those guys. But then there's one guy that's actually from Greece. And that's the premise here is a bunch of Greek soldiers kidnapped, taken to the Amazonian queen's regime, made to live there, made to be their slaves, and made to be their husbands.
That's right.
Or at least their lovers.
For that breeding time. For
breeding time.
Yeah.
And but there's one character who wears a Egyptian pharaoh hat through the whole thing. He reminds me of a character from Moonlighting and One Crazy Summer.
80smemories.com.
Sometimes you gotta say, what the fuck? Make your move. That's easy for you to say. I mean, you're all set. You're probably going to Harvard. Me, I don't want to make a mistake, jeopardize my future.
You reminded me of Klinger.
Okay, a lot like Klinger. But
Jamie Farr. You look like Jamie Farr to me.
Yeah, was he Jamie? It wasn't Jamie Farr.
No, he looked. He reminded me of him, though. He was like, but at one point they talk about him. You know, no, I don't want any children. Or
right?
Something.
Yeah, towards the end of the movie, he said, "So, aren't you going to stay and take a bride?" And he says,
"No,
well, I'd rather stay single, if you know what I mean." And I could take the queen as my bride, but I'd rather not.
Yeah,
he runs away. So why all this emphasis on that? Why? What is going on in this movie?
I don't. I was as surprised as anybody. I did not see it coming. I have it on a package of science fiction films. The cover of the box is a giant flying turtle. So why this movie is there, I have no clue. I really don't.
But both movies, The Wild Women of Wongo and this,
yes,
end with mass marriages.
That's true. They do. It's amazing to me that they were that it actually was a double bill, since it was basically kind of throw a dart at two titles.
Yeah,
as far as
parrots, they both end with parrots. The parrot comes back.
They do.
They both have this. They're very ambiguous about the sexuality of the male characters.
Mm-hmm.
The women have to really struggle to get these guys into the sack.
That's true. And just as a point of reference, in my life, it was the third movie. Second night in a row, three movies in a row with parrots, talking, wisecracking parrots. I had seen one the night before called The Fuller Brush Girl with Lucille Ball, and Mel Blanc does the voice of the parrot.
I bet you that was the best parrot.
Well, yeah, and he actually also has the last line in the picture, and he makes guarded remarks about the couple getting together, about them making love and everything.
God, what?
It's really strange that there would be three in a row with parrots. I don't know.
What is the deal? I guess it takes a lot of effort to get a man and woman together. You know that you got to get the animal kingdom involved. You got to get Mother Nature and Father Time involved.
He has to come in.
You have to have Rod Taylor and his time machine get do some manipulations.
You look at Rod Taylor never acts in that. He's swishy in this picture.
He really is.
And very kind of effete. He's like, oh, you look beautiful, marvelous. And he's like trotting around in that little toga. I love that they squirt all the men down and then make them wear little togas. There's a point. But it's like he made movies in 1960. And you look at those movies, and he's like Rod Taylor. And then you see this movie, you go, what? What, did he lose a bet? What, did they Shanghai him on a ship? I don't...
I don't know. He's a, you know, he's still around, Rod Taylor.
Yes, he is, yes. He was in, he's in Inglourious Basterds, the Quentin Tarantino movie.
Yeah. Maybe we should, like, email him and ask him, what were you think? What happened that made you had to make this movie? He'd send him a message.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe he's already looking, you know, where our ratings are tremendous.
I know. We got big ratings.
And we've won the Newbery Award, so it's very...
Isn't that for children's literature?
The Newbery Award for children's literature and podcast excellence.
Oh, that's great.
Well, the Queen shall have a king.
And high time, too.
Let's go and change the Constitution.
Oh, fine.
Hooray for women! Hooray for men! Hooray for... Good night, all!
So we need to pick out a couple more movies for next time.
Oh, yes, we sure do. I had a few double bills I thought might be fun.
Okay.
But you just tell me.
Some people made suggestions to us. It was,
oh, really?
Have to look through it. Not, maybe we won't do it for next time. I'll have to look through them and read the suggestions on the next episode. But what were you what were you thinking was to double feature?
Cabin Fever and Cabin in the Woods.
I think those are two. I've seen Cabin in the Woods.
I have too.
And it is available on Netflix streaming.
Oh. And Cabin Fever, is that also? Because it's a wonderful, I think it would play, would play.
No, Cabin Fever is not available on Netflix streaming, but maybe it's on Hulu or somewhere else.
Oh, well, check it out.
You know what? It's on Netflix, on Hulu. Is Cabin Fever 2.
That's a different movie.
Well, I know, but it's a sequel, right?
I know, but I mean, it's not as much. The Cabin Fever has sort of a cult following, and the second one doesn't.
Do you have a copy of Cabin Fever?
No.
Well, I'll just put it on hold at the library, see how many copies are there, and we can do that. That sounds like a plan. That was too easy. I wanted to mention, I actually went to the movie theater and saw a movie recently.
I did, too. What did you see?
I saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
I did, too.
You did?
I did.
Wow, weird. What did you think of that movie?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was very interesting. I liked
What did you like better, the planet or the apes?
Well, I kind of liked the apes more than
all
the
right, planet. All right, all right.
Did you? What do you like?
I didn't care for it.
Well,
I didn't care for it. Yeah. I didn't. It's too newfangled for me. All those computerized apes. I didn't like it.
I could not. It didn't bother me one bit. And I thought it was. I love that they rebooted it. I thought the other one with James Franco was really interesting too. And this is a very much a follow. They are doing a story arc that leads, unlike other things where they have rebooted it and they go other places. They are leading up to the Charlton Heston movie. That's where they're going.
Yeah, I know.
And I love that they're doing it so precisely. I think that's great.
Well, maybe we can do the Planet of the new Planet of the Apes sometime.
Well, maybe. Yeah. We could do a lot of
because we could argue about that. Because I thought it was well, you liked it. I won't go bashing it, but I didn't like it very much. I thought
I know you don't like any new movies, so
that's not true.
Anything made after 1978 that doesn't have Molly Ringwald in it, you don't like. So
that's there's a few movies that I like. I like those the foreign films. Yeah, the subtitles. I like that.
Like?
I can't think of one, but I like those. And, the ones that for smart people. I like those movies.
Well, yes, the smart people movies are fascinating.
I like those better.
They really are. There's nothing like a smart movie. They're really...
Actually, mostly I just watch TV. But
it's nice to go out. Did you see the Planet of the Apes? Did you see it in 3D?
No, I saw it in what they call the flat screen.
I saw it in the 3D.
Ah.
Yeah, I see it in 3D. I snuck in to see it. I saw it for free.
How do you sneak into a 3D movie? You have to get the glasses.
I stole glasses out of the box that the people throw them in when they leave.
Beautiful story.
Bruce and I go to the Jose Theater. Three flicks for 50 cents. Take me to your leader. We're teenagers from outer space. We just let you think we're part of the human.